Hello, hello, and welcome. I'm Nick, and joining me today is special guest host.
I'm George. Hi, everyone.
And welcome to the Liku Studios podcast, roundtable number 28, Teamwork.
Teamwork.
So hey, how you doing?
Good, good. I'm ready. This is like, if we're talking about teamwork, it's like, this has to be a buddy cop movie, right?
Yeah. So do you want to be the recluse, nothing left to live for, 3 days away from retirement? Or do you want to be the...
I want to be the loose cannon. I want to be the bad cop.
Okay.
If that's possible.
I want to be a robotic dog brain in the body of a... cyborg washing machine? Does that work?
I think I missed that Buttercup film.
It's a website. I think it's just theyfightcrime.org, and it's just a random generator.
Very nice.
It's pretty good. All right. So let's talk about teamwork. There's been a lot of games, even before the invent of, let's call it the squad-based shooter, that are trying to do teamwork, either trying to encourage it or force it. I want to bring to mind MOBAs and Left 4 Dead and Team Fortress 2.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, if you want to bring in something like a Savage or a Natural Selection where you're trying to...
Oh, Natural Selection. That's a great
example.
All right,
example. That hit a vein.
Yes, I love Natural Selection.
But you know, that one also trying to do the... trying to bridge the gap between, you know, one person playing the RTS and giving orders and everyone else just trying to fill them out.
Well, Battlefield should join that crew as well in that case.
Yep. Was it Battlefield 2 and then they're bringing it back for 4?
Yep. Or Battlefield, it was 2042.
Oh, 20. That game got a bad rap and I forget why.
Probably because it wasn't very good, but the Commander stuff was awesome. It was like set in the future and stuff, so I don't know.
Well, that one was fantastic because there were, like, the home base capture points were on giant mobile overhead ships, so you actually had to get in the catapult vehicle to launch onto them.
Yeah, exactly.
Did a fantastic sense of scale with that. It was great.
I totally agree. It's really one of the main reasons I'm excited for Battlefield 4.
Yeah?
Yeah. The Commander mode. I mean, the Commander mode is an awesome idea.
But yeah, I don't know. Can you think of anything else, ways people have tried to get people to play together nicely?
Oh, to play together nicely. Yeah, because there's a lot of games that encourage people to play together nicely, though. I might add can we include, like, co-op play? Is that something we want to think about including, or are we just thinking multiplayer here?
Co-op play absolutely works. Hear you about to say Borderlands.
Borderlands is a good one. I think a lot of the class-based shooters are pretty good, right? Because I think if you put TF2 there, you could probably put Borderlands. And I was actually going to say Fear 3 as well. Fear 3.
Fear 3? Yeah.
Fear 3.
What did that do on the co-op end?
Oh, on the co-op end, so I think one of the things that is important for teamwork is differentiating different roles in combat, right? Because if there are things that your ally can do that you can't, you have to rely on them for one reason or another, right?
Right.
I think all of the games we've mentioned so far do that in a way. So for Threer, their co-op is kind of neat because one person is playing a sort of regular shooter, and the other person is playing this weird, like, ghost brother who can possess people and jump across the battlefield. So, like, the core gameplay of each of those characters is very different. So if you play co-op, you have to rely on your partner in one way or another. There's some, like, competitive elements in the game because, you know, you want to get more kills or, you know, be the first to make a decision or some shit like that. But I think in the long run, like, that type of having to rely on somebody else is what really forges at least some aspects of good team play.
Well, a lot of this came out of two games which everyone seems to love and I'm not the hottest on was League of Legends and Left 4 Dead.
Oh, you don't like Left 4 Dead?
Well, I think Left 4 Dead should not be... I think they're selling it wrong. I think Left 4 Dead would be a better game if you were fighting robots or aliens or basically anything but zombies. Because the thing about it is, you know, zombies sort of bring to mind that survival horror about, you know, you're against the odds. But I actually think it's a bad team play experience because they have taken this idea of relying on your buddies, but they have made it sort of purely mechanical. They have made it so that, you know, if you are in trouble, you need someone to pull you out of it. But it's always a matter of, it's very, it's not exactly binary, but it's very just like, there are things that need to get done. You never really have to think about it. It's just, there is a role. If somebody gets caught by a smoker, you have to free them. If somebody, you know, if somebody has the Molotov, just, you know, everyone has to get away from whatever they're going to throw it at. And it's never interesting. It never, it always, it's just like, you know, there was one very specific game that I had where, and maybe I was just playing with a bad person, but or a poor teamwork player, let's say.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's always a threat in any of these games.
But he did this thing where we were going through a section, and he was running ahead, and I got caught by an enemy. I got caught by a smoker, and I died because he was too far ahead. And he actually blamed me for saying that, you know, well, why did you get caught behind? I got caught behind because the way the game is designed is that if one person gets caught, there is nothing they can do about it. They must rely on the other player.
Yeah, and when you're being hit by a zombie, it slows you down. So, like, there's literally literally no way. I mean, and also, if he's ahead of you and he passes through, like, an invisible door, it'll, like, activate zombies. They'll know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so it's this sort of thing about, you know, he was playing it from this idea of, like, yes, there is a role that everyone can play, and everyone... You know, it is expected everyone will play exactly to it, which is also one of my arguments why MOBA is or why MOBAs are have a sort of hostile community, because there is this idea of, you know, you can bring down the team if you're not playing up to the best. So if you're not playing your best, you are obviously doing it on purpose to be an ass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the Left 4 Dead example is an interesting one. Because you're right. Like, you're either incapacitated or you're not incapacitated. Like, every type of... I mean, there's some zombies that can just attack you, right? And there might be some team play strategy in terms of, well, when do I use the health pack? Who do I use the health pack on? That kind of thing. But for the most part, if you're grabbed by a smoker, you're just grabbed by a smoker. Someone else has to unleash you. If you're pounced by a hunter, you just have to deal with it. So I see what you mean there, because it is sort of, you just sort of do what you have to do. That being said, I think the team play comes into fruition when you're running away or you're trying to strategize, because, you know, a lot of it is like being on your guard and having to rely on people when they might do what your buddy did and just leave you behind, right? And sometimes the person has to make that call, like, oh, I'm just going to leave them behind. Like, have you ever played Left 4 Dead, like, versus mode?
I have.
Yeah, I really liked versus mode a lot, especially playing as the zombies. But if you've played that, then you know that, you know, some of the dominant strategies are for just everyone to gun it. Just everyone runs to the exit. And even if the zombies could incapacitate one or even two of them, it's unless you act very quickly, it's a pretty good chance that they all make it. So it's kind of a weird experience, because I think the different ways that you can play that game are surprisingly varied, but how you rely on people doesn't change. So I don't know. I can see what you're saying about Left 4 Dead.
Well, because it is this idea of relying on people, that there are certain cases, this is, you know, it's forcing teamwork in a way, because there are things that you cannot do.
Yeah, but you kind of have to, right? Like, we have plenty of shooters where theoretically teamwork is possible and people just don't do it.
Well, the trick is ways of making it so that when you play with friends, you can play together to be better than a single player alone.
Right.
Any of the sort of simultaneous co-op Mario games.
So are you saying that you don't want to be forced to help people? Is that the issue?
Well, I don't want to be forced to rely on the help of others.
Yeah, maybe you should be the Devil May Care cop.
Listen, they have my family, and I have a very particular.
Damn it, Nick! You're a loose cannon.
You already have my badge.
Yeah.
Yeah, any of the Mario games, though, where you can play that entirely single player, and then it doesn't change for the multiplayer,
But
when you can, you know, pick up other players and bounce them to new heights, and, you know, basically use the fact that you have multiple people to break the game, those are really some of my favorite teamwork moments of, you know, by working together, we are capable of more, but mm-hmm. none of us are being, you know, no abilities are being taken away from us so that they can be divvied amongst the players.
Yeah. I see. You're just like, you're anti-game communism. Is that what is going on?
I'm like Andrew Ryan.
Yeah.
everyone deserves the work that they put into it. I will not take it away from you. You will earn it.
The thing about the Mario games, though, is then they undermine that sense of teamwork by giving you, like, by adding hit collision to your characters on, like, tiny, tiny platforms. You know, like, you're right. It adds things to it. But, I don't know, at the same time, how much does it add? Like, single player, you can reach all of those destinations as well, for the most part, right? Like, you could do your sort of cool triple jump and, you know, really heighten your level of play. Just when you're doing teamwork, it means you just don't have to be as skilled as you would normally have to be.
Well, it does change the challenge, because it does change that hitbox thing. Like, we've had, we were playing a mod for Super Mario Bros. X, and one level was not built for two players, so you start on a narrow platform, but with two players, you spawn in the same spot, and you immediately get pushed off the sides.
Yeah.
And so it is adding an extra, like, it... Communication, I think, needs to be a big part of teamwork, which, again, is why Left 4 Dead isn't that good, because you know what you need to do. There's almost no reason to talk to other people. You could be playing it almost completely separate, but as long as you know how the game works, what the roles are, what the mechanics are, you know what to do.
Yeah.
But, you know...
I think it's a little different when you're playing with four players, because you know what has to be done, but who does it and how they do it is sort of up to the team. So there are occasions when, you know, someone will go down and you'll go, I got it, cover me, or, you know, something like that, where you actually have to strategize in terms of how you're going to carry out the action. What you have to do is clear. How you do it, I think there's a little bit more room for variability. But you're right. I mean, I've never really thought about Left 4 Dead that way. I think you're generally correct. There's really not that much, you know, other than what you know you have to do, there's not much room to maneuver around that. But what do you think about things like Rayman Legends and the sort of the situations where they force you into, like, a two-player experience, right? You unlock an area, or, like, Little Big Planet maybe is another example, and you have to rely on the other person, but it's a forced two-player experience.
Can you think of, like, a more... If you can think of a more specific... In general, I think that, like, requiring multiple people isn't a problem. It goes back to being that... like, if you want to say in like, a puzzle platformer segment, like, you need... like, Cookies and Cream,
uh-huh.
an old PS2 game, where, you know, if the puzzles are around, like, you know, you need to step on a button so that you can progress and you're sort of leapfrogging, or it's, you know...
This is a game called Cookies and Cream?
Cookies and Cream for the PlayStation 2. It is a two-player only game. And it's like constantly split. The single player mode is each character is controlled by one half of the controller, and you have to control both at the same time.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Yeah. But yeah, that's like, let's talk about Portal 2 co-op.
Uh-huh.
Where a lot of those puzzles are solved by, you know, you figure out what the solution is, and then you just need two people to work on it. That's not a problem, but at the same thing, it's this aspect of nobody has been dumbed down. It's that, you know, you are both capable of the same thing, and really, it's just the fact that the puzzle is big enough that you need, you know, more hands than a single person has.
Yeah.
But, you know, who fills which role, and, you know, actually needing to do teamwork to communicate, to get timing, to make sure that, you know, everybody is on the same page about what their role is.
I'll give you that. I think Portal 2 is beautifully designed for co-op.
There
are occasions where they split you up. So, like, one of you does have to do something and the other has to do something else. But the fact that they give you a button to look through the eyes of your partner is genius. It's just so simple, but so damn smart. Because if they're stuck, you could look at the environment as well and try to help figure it out. And there are times when you'll figure it out, but you cannot be the one to do it. So you have to tell them, okay, I'm going to try to describe to you all of the weird, bizarre actions that you have to take. And that alone is its own type of game.
Yeah, but they have they almost have an achievement to that effect, the one about Professor. It's like a player who has beaten the co-op plays with a player who has not. And there's an achievement for that because there's this idea of, like, I know what the answers are. I'm going to, you know, you're going to be my second set of hands, and that's how this experience is going to go.
Yeah. No, you're definitely right. Portal 2 is way better co-op experience than Left 4 Dead. But let's talk about League of Legends again.
Okay, all right. So bring it on. What do you got?
You were saying something about... reiterate your point about the way that League of Legends undermines teamwork or takes things away from you, because I think that's an interesting idea.
Every character in League of Legends has 4 abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But there are hundreds of characters.
117 right now.
117, okay.
Yes.
I think there's only 110 last time I checked.
Yeah.
And they all have, you know, while there's a lot of overlap between abilities, the fact that it breaks into sort of discrete roles about ranged and support and AP and MP and all of that. Like, the way that they have, and I feel that is a forced teamwork, is they have taken all of these abilities and divvied them up so that you have to play as a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's because... And at high levels, that's fine. The idea of, like, you know, they're pushing this over here, so now, you know, we need you two to go over there and deal with that because you're the ones who had that ability. And in a high-level sense, I think that's fine. My issue with League of Legends has more to do with the fact that there's progression built into each match.
Yeah.
Because at a high level, that's fine. But it, when I'm playing, I'm bad at the game, so I'm usually, you know, at least a bit underleveled.
Yeah.
But even think of it from the perspective of, you know, if they're pushing, you know, with this kind of maneuver, and the abilities to deal with that maneuver are not the ones that you have.
Yeah.
You're hanging out.
Yeah, I mean, it's these types of MOBAs are kind of hard because, admittedly, they have very steep learning curves, so. If you step into a role and you're completely new and you're playing with a team of people who are quite good, then your experience is not going to be very fun. You're not going to be very good. And yeah, you can drag down the team to some extent. But I think that in general, there are certain strategies you can use no matter who you are to at least buy some time, right? Like, I think one of the problems that I have with the way that, League of Legends players in particular, and especially League of Legends players who I feel like are in this certain arc between, like, they start getting better and then they get good enough to be pissed when they lose, right? But not good enough to, like, really understand the whole mechanics of the game. I think there's this trend where they like to blame people. Like, this is where that term, like, don't feed sort of comes from.
Yeah.
Where I think for any sort of team game, no matter what class you've play, no matter what role you're playing in the game, you have to sort of carry the entire team in a way, right? If I'm playing with someone who's very bad, right, and they're not getting it, and they're not doing their job, well then, instead of blaming that person, right, if I want to be a good teammate, if I want good sportsmanship, I should help them. I should try to tell them, oh, hey, you know, here's how you should last hit, or, you know, don't be so courageous, hug your tower, you know, like, there's all sorts of strategies I could try to help this person out, right? Like,
yeah.
What it makes me think of is that, you know, League of Legends is like an e-sport, right? Whatever e-sports means.
Yeah.
And whenever we're talking about teamwork, right, we kind of have to talk about actual real-world sports. And I don't know if you're much of a soccer fan, Nick.
Any day I'll take some Mega Man soccer.
Well, there you go, right? Mega Man soccer. Not a great example in this case, but...
Woodman on goal!
What I'm thinking of is the circumstances when the goalie comes out of the goal box and is just playing like midfield, right? Mm-hmm. Occasionally that happens. Usually it's when one team is so far behind they just need the extra presence offensively. But every now and then you'll see something where like a goalie will score a goal. Super rare. But when you see that happen, it's like, okay, you know what? This person's role has fundamentally changed. Even though they're the goalie, they have that specialization. They have to do their part in carrying the team.
Mm. Well, I think that actually sort of reinforces my point, because it's this idea of adaptability. Mm-hmm. When you divide abilities between players in order to force them to work together, that is because now you're making the team as a whole adaptable. And in certain contexts, that's fine. But even in that example, like, you know, imagine if, you know, if the goalie left the goalie box, then, you know, he was taken off the field completely, or he just wasn't allowed to. Like, I feel that is more what League is doing. The fact that he can come out, like, he is a player on the field. He is best at one thing. He is expected to be one thing. But the fact that he could do, you know, he could come out and be something else, that shows an adaptability, which the way League handles teamwork, I don't think I come from an old school. I come from, you know, Unreal Tournament and Quake, where, you know, there was no class-based defined weapon, just everyone has weapons. That means anyone can handle any kind of situation, as long as, you know, they've been doing their map control, they have all of the weapons.
Yeah. Well, there's a few things. Okay, go ahead.
And then just saying that the teamwork in those games then comes from, you know, communication, map control, about, and the skill is just being, you know, being able to adapt in the right way on a player, so there is, you know, knowing how to read the situation is an important thing, but, you know, you can have people who are like, you know, this player is our best sniper, this player, you know, this player knows how to play this section of this map, and he can just hold the line, you know, playing defense, playing offense, where to push. It gets into tactics, rather than just being like, okay, you know, instead of as a team reading the situation and doing what needs to be done, it's about, you know, what can we try, where can we push, how can we get through this. It's becomes puzzle solving instead of just reading and change, and instead of just call and response, is actually adapting. It's actually interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'm just gonna go off a little inside baseball for like League stuff, if you don't mind. I apologize to any listeners who have no idea what these terms I'm saying mean. Okay.
But I think I've complained about this game enough on the show that people actually know, are starting to learn what these mean.
Oh, awesome. Okay, good. Don't listen to Nick. You should play League of Legends. the spells thing. One thing is, I think that you're over-exaggerating how significant differentiated spells are, because there's not that many circumstances in the game where something absolutely must happen, but no one, like, but there's someone with, like, a special ability to do that. So let's have an example, right? Someone is, there's an enemy who's pushing into your base, they've destroyed your tower, and they're fighting your Nexus, right? And all five team members are up. One of you has to go back to defend your base, right? Mm-hmm. Anyone can go back and do that. It doesn't matter what spells you have. There might be some who are better 1v1 that particular character, right? So if Tryndamere is attacking your base, right, you might want to send Brand, right? Like a ranged dots champion to defend your base or something, right? If it were anybody but Tryndamere, you might want to send somebody else on your team, right? That person who you believe will have a better chance of beating this character 1v1, right? But it doesn't really matter who you send. If you don't want to send Brand, if Brand's like, nope, I don't like this idea of you telling me what to do, anyone can go. You know, it could be another melee, it could be another ranged person, whatever. There are just some people who are better than others, right?
Right.
Now, I think that even though some people are, in fact, better than others at certain situations in the game, deciding who goes, I think, is part of that meta play, right? Because there's this like additional game going on, right? So, split pushing, for example. I don't know if you know this term very much, but it's something that you see a lot in like very high level play, and it's a trend where it's kind of like the I was going to compare it to StarCraft, but I should probably not compare it to StarCraft. It's kind of like there's three lanes in the game, right? Split pushing is when you've got two or three people pushing one lane and another set pushing another lane, right? And what it means is that you're forcing the other team to defend one or the other, right? Defend this objective or defend the other objective, and no matter what, I'm going to take one of your towers, right? The act of split pushing is a really interesting sort of metagame, because you have to decide, who am I sending where, right? If you're sending a group of one to two people to attack a tower that's really far away from your own base, that person is risking their life, right? So they have to play very, very carefully. So deciding who you send to do that pressure is a sort of interesting game in its own right. So it doesn't matter whose abilities you have, right? Like, in the case of Tryndamere attacking your base, you could decide to send Brand, right, who's very good maybe against Tryndamere in a 1v1. But instead, you could say, actually, you know what, let's keep Brand, because he's also good against this other champion. Instead, let's send Rumble or something, right? Someone who's got, who can maybe survive it, and we're just going to take the risk, and we're going to see if we can push their Nexus down faster than they can push ours, right? So there's like a constant sort of interplay and metagaming going on, I think, that occurs and can only occur when you have some differentiation between characters and classes and abilities, right? Because, I mean, I think to some extent you're right. There are times when it's like, you're playing support, you have to do that. You're expected to do that. If you don't do that, everyone's going to think you're an asshole and they're going to report you or something, right? That occasionally happens. But for the most part, we're sacrificing that to have all this other cool stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And it does lead to some high-level tactics about, you know, risk-reward, about, like, this is the most optimal thing. Like, if there was only one thing, if this was the only thing happening, this would be what we do.
Right.
But if you want to, you know, if there's another front, if there's other things, if there's two places where he could be most optimal, it's about, you know, what can the rest of the team handle if he's doing that? And there is a lot of that, like, high-level tactics that is really interesting, and I think is the better part of that game.
Right. And team fights, for example, right? Late in the game, you're sort of, there's this role, AD carry, right? Your AD carry is a person who just unloads damage at the end of the game. And everyone's job is basically to protect that person so they could, like, mow them down, right? It doesn't, you don't have to play that way. You probably should, because the AD carry is going to be very good. But, you know, when you're deciding, oh, you know, what, how do we play this team fight? How do we organize and structure ourselves? You have to be thinking about those class roles. And you're just not going to be able to get that if everyone can do the same amount of damage and everyone has the same abilities.
Right. And even then, like, the way that the characters stat up, you know, as they progress, as they level up, that does define a little bit about what they can do and how they could, you know, the best way for them to be used.
Yeah, but there's some adaptability in the itemization.
But the whole sort of, you know, item buying aspect of it does give them adaptability. And you can change it to, you know, most optimally in like about like, you know, three or four roles, depending on what you can do, what you have access to.
There's also rune pages, which you like set up before game. They're not huge game changers, but you can decide, well, I'm going to use a tanky DPS or a purely offensive DPS. So there's some variability before the match ever starts. Same with masteries as well. And then I would say also, especially in draft play, when you're playing a ranked play and you can ban certain players and you can see what your enemies are picking and sort of decide what you want to play in response to that, that adds a level of metagame as well that you can only sort of have in this case where people are differentiated to an extreme.
Yeah. And again, yeah, like, but it's a lot. My issues with League have a lot of more like smaller mechanical issues, which I think undermines a lot of what this is. This, you know, this high level play is really interesting, and I think it's fine, and I think it can be exciting. There's other things that I think get in the way of that, but at the same, you know, this could come down to my own taste that I like. You know, I like everyone is super adaptable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a taste issue. I also think the big thing is, and this is really important for teamwork. Period. Right, but how do you teach people to act as a team, especially in games that are so very different, right? Like, Battlefield is not Left 4 Dead, is not F3, is not League of Legends at all. Mm-hmm. So the skills that you learn, the ways that you adapt, the ways that you work as a team, aren't always the same. So, you know, especially for people who are new to MOBAs, they'll get in there, and they'll go, I don't know what to do, no one's helping me, everyone's kind of being an asshole, this game's not fun, I'm leaving, right? And that's sort of, Riot's been trying to fix that, but it's a really difficult process to do.
Well, I think Dota has, like, I know they introduced a mentor system in Team Fortress 2. I don't know if that's carried over to Dota yet, but they do
What's the mentor system? I don't know this.
It's on the main menu, instead of having like a tutorial button, they have like a mentor button, and basically people have sort of volunteered to be mentors. I think if you've put in enough hours or like have a high enough rank, you can volunteer to be a mentor. So then when new players on the main menu, they'll be like, hey, you haven't really played this before, you should click here and get a mentor. And basically it'll put the two of you in like a party and then matchmake you together, the idea being that the mentor will be playing alongside you and coaching you on, you know, your first couple of games. Yeah. And like just teaching you to get into, you know, basically crowdsourcing tutorials in a sense.
Yeah. That's a great idea though.
Yeah. No, from what I heard, it works pretty well. And I've heard, you know, some of the best stories about getting into game MOBAs, especially like Dota and LoL, is what you do is, you know, you get into it because you have like three or four friends who are already into it, and you just play with them for a while. Because even if you're low level, basically you rely on them to tell you what to do until you start getting a feel for everything yourself.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah. No, it's pretty neat, and it seems to work.
Yeah.
But even then, like, that's... You know, MOBAs have a very distinct feel to them, which is why they've managed to become a genre unto themselves. But I don't know if that's I think that's more a matter of the mechanics and how the game works more than how the teamwork acts. Because I think depending on the genre, the teamwork is kind of always the same. Because if you're looking at Team Fortress or Left 4 Dead or Battlefield or Counter-Strike or Unreal, like, at a certain level, those the only difference is between the class-based and the, you know, everyone is on a level playing field. And even then, in something like Battle, or a lot of them, when you can switch classes during a respawn, you know, that negates that a little bit, because you can, you know, change completely what your character is capable of pretty much on the fly.
Yeah, it's similar to Team Fortress 2, right? You can switch your character after you die or whatever, but you always sort of, before you hop into the match, you see the, like, class, I don't know, what do you call it? The class, the current, like, the stats, right?
Distribution.
Yes, the class distribution of your match. That's the word I was looking for.
I took a consistency class once.
Yeah, well, like, if everyone's a pyro or whatever, you're like, okay, I should probably not be a pyro. This is ridiculous. You could sort of do the same thing for other class-based games.
So or unless you want to be wacky and everyone on the team go pyro, like,
yeah,
it'll work for about a second before people figure it out.
Yeah, which is fine. I don't know. I definitely have a certain taste, and my I kind of like filling a role. Like, I like just doing my job, right? I think maybe it comes from just years of playing World of Warcraft or something. But you know, I always really enjoyed playing a support class. So, like, I played a healer in World of Warcraft, and I played it in Borderlands, and I play it in League of Legends quite a bit. So, like, there's something deeply satisfying to me about doing a job from the sidelines and not getting credit for it, but just knowing that I did a good job, right? Like, Battlefield, I'm always being, like, an engineer, you know, someone who's coming from the back and, like, leaving ammo and med packs and stuff like that. So, I don't know. It's definitely the type of gameplay that I really enjoy. But I think part of that is it's just my personal taste. So games that really do differentiate it, and even games that make you commit to that, right? Like, MMOs definitely make you commit to that role, right? Like,
absolutely.
The gameplay that you're playing as a rogue versus the gameplay you're playing as a healer, very, very different. And some games will let you respec, but some, you know, often it's costly, it's a process, you've got to, you know, do some research and investigation. But for the most part, I think people generally pick the role that they find fun and entertaining, and they're all different, and then they just sort of see what happens and put them together as a team, and having those differentiated abilities allows you to do cool things that you couldn't normally do. Well, maybe it's because I suck at Counter-Strike, though. It could also just be that.
It could be. Well, like, going back to taste, like, I can kind of, you know, in a class-based game, I will pretty often, I've rolled in a couple of MMOs playing as a support character, but I know a lot of times the way that I feel good when playing on part of a team is, like, if, you know, the whole team is sort of doing an assault, but if I can, like, read the situation and be like, oh, wait, we need a sniper right there, I feel good saying, like, okay, I'm going to, you know, take a minute, go here, snipe, and then move on to the next thing that needs to be done. Like,
yeah,
it's just this idea of, like, reading the situation, but then again, instead of relying on another person to do the problem, I can just be like, hey guys, I'm going to go snipe, and then just do it. And it's like, okay, now I'm going to go over here and defend, and just do it. And, mm-hmm. you know, even if, you know, even if you want to say that, if you're designing your game so that everyone can do everything, so nobody is particularly good at anything, mm-hmm. like, just the fact that you can, you know, jump between, it's like finding the best place to use it rather than being the best able to do it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And to some extent, even in like a regular first-person shooter where everyone has the exact same abilities, roles do sort of come up, right? If you and I are playing Counter-Strike or something, I could be the guy that covers you, or, you know, maybe I'm not very good at wall jumping or rocket jumping, right? And so you might be the person who does that, and I'll take on another role. And it's not because I can't do what you do, I just can't do it as well. So I sort of acquiesce that position to you. So I think right. even those sort of come up. I think the issue that you're having is one of which you like that variability. You want to be able to switch around. But I think it's a situation where it's cost and benefit, right? Not being able to switch around, you're right, it can be really frustrating. If you have to rely on some other person to be the sniper and they're not doing their job and it's not getting done, and that can make a bad experience. And if you could switch and become the sniper and then go right back to your assault class, then that's great for you, right? You can have a grand old time. Mm. But I think that you get something by forcing people to be in those roles, right? I think if you say, look, you're the sniper, this is what you do, you don't do anything else, there's a level of commitment maybe to it. There's a level of, you know, if anything, I think this is kind of similar to like a choose your own adventure, right? Where, mm-hmm. or like, it's like The Walking Dead in a way. Once you make your decision, you've committed that decision, the file is saved, you know, you can't go reload a previous save, you've committed, you're doing it, that's it. It'd be similar like that, right? But mechanically, once you've committed to being a sniper, that's your role, you've got to do it, you've got to commit. There's room to maneuver within that space, but once you've committed to that space, that's where you're at. And if you don't want to be a sniper, don't sign up to be a sniper next time.
You learn it very early that, especially like in board games, if players are sitting there with nothing to do, that's not good game design. Like, because they're yeah. just waiting. They are being
well,
held up.
Yeah, and that's true for class-based games as well, right? Like, if you're playing a medic and there's nothing to do, well, then they didn't design that class very well, right? Like, yeah. there are games that, you know, I think Borderlands 1 is not a very good class-based game. I think Borderlands 2 is awesome, right? Because there's simple things that they did to get people back in the match, right? These complaints come up with Dungeons & Dragons all the time, right? In D&D... like 1.5, right? To play a medic, right? When you get experience, you have to hit something to get experience, which is just ludicrous. So if you're a healer, you're always nerfed. Yeah. You're not really doing anything. It's awful, right? And so in D&D 4th edition, everyone can do damage. It doesn't matter who you are. Everyone's doing crazy shit, right? But it feels like too much like everyone is the same class. So I think the happy middle ground is somewhere in between, right? Where you've got to be able to have maneuverability and feel like your decisions are important, but also, you know, you have to be able to do something. You can't, like you said, you can't just be sitting there doing nothing. That's bad game design no matter what game you're playing.
Yeah. But that, you know, that's the thing that I kind of really hated about Team Fortress 2. Like, if I did want to go be a sniper and, you know, take care of this sniping problem,
yep.
if I succeed, I'm still alive, I'm still a sniper, and now I'm useless. And that felt, it just, I don't know, I always just thought that felt kind of terrible. Like, why would you make this a part of your game? Why can't I just go and be the next useful thing?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I mean, I think that some of the ways they try to mediate that, because you're right, right? Like, if it's like, oh, there's a sniper over there, you say, I got this, guys. You take the sniper role, you kill the sniper, he doesn't come back. Now you're just like a sniper, so, and, you know, what are you going to do now? You could either go perch somewhere and do what they were doing. So that's one option. Or you could just run around with a jar of piss and like try to get yourself killed.
Yeah. Well, modern TF2 is also a weird bag just because of the way that all the items and everything have kind of exploded and bloated and what is anything anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really play TF2 anymore. It's partially because of all that confusion.
Yeah. You can get a Quake 1 rocket launcher. That almost brought me back. Can I tell you a little story about
Please.
An excellent team play experience I had recently?
Go for it.
We were playing Doom co-op, but we imposed a certain set of rules on our game. We were playing with no HUD. with mm-hmm. none of the, like, extra...
So no reticle either.
So, yeah, no reticle, no health. The only way that you could check the status of yourself was to go to the map screen, which does not pause.
Mm-hmm.
We were playing that when items... there were no... Doom did this thing where if you were playing co-op, it would have, like, extra weapons and items and stuff, so, you know, to accommodate more players. We right. turned all of those off. We also turned off weapons staying on the ground if you picked it up. So this created a severe scarcity. It created forcing yourself to create safe environments before moving on, so that way you could check your state. And it also forced us to actually communicate, because there was no way... like how Left 4 Dead puts, you know, the health and items of everyone on your team at the bottom of the screen. We didn't even have ourselves. So it forced us to talk and say, like, you know, it was this sort of really great feeling that, like, after, like, you know, every time you started hearing gunshots, you just started, like, you know, how you feeling? How's your health? How's your armor? How's your ammo? And we were going,
cute.
And it was really good, because we would actually, you know, enter and, like, as soon as a room was clear and we see what else is left on the ground, just be like, all right, what do you need? What do I need? Okay, you can take the ammo, and I'll take the health, and I'll grab these rockets, because I can run to the rocket launcher later when we finally find it. And it felt like actual team play. We were working together. We were talking. We were figuring things out as we went along, because there was no, like, there were no classes. There was no set, this is what you have to do, this is what your role is. But at the same time, you know, just organically, we got to this point of just like, well, you know, I have these guns, you have these guns. We split up before, so now you have this item, and, you know, I know where the door is. And it became this very natural thing of, like, we start at a base level of we have all the same abilities. We're all capable of the same things. But just, you know, because we are different entities, because we have had, you know, even not, you know, even if we're going down the same hallway, depending on who gets hit more, we are now in different states, and we need to communicate that to each other, stop, figure out what the best thing to do is, and then move on.
Yeah.
And that was, like, that session that we had was, I felt, a better, you know, a better example of team play than, you know, basically anything class-based, anything I've played in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and that's a really good example, for sure, because that sounds awesome. I mean,
it was fantastic.
Part of it is because you put those constraints on yourself, right? That, you put all those self constraints on. That's sort of the role that a designer has, right? They're deciding, well, what constraints am I going to put on my players to make them potentially have an experience that you had, right? Mm. It just so happens that yours was emergent and, well, somewhat in the sense that you chose what rules to put upon yourself, but it also sort of came apart by, you know, how much damage your allies took and things like that. So it's cool in that you sort of adapted to that, and it became a class-based thing, or it became a role-based thing. And it became a role-based thing that can switch on the fly. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But that's just hard to design, right? Like, if I'm going to make a game that instantly gets people into the experience that you were having in Doom, I sort of have to make it class-based, right? I can't necessarily trust them to do it. I mean, I guess I could make a thing where, you know, the rules change on the fly, and I think some games do that, right? I think, to some extent, I think Borderlands 2 does that, right? Depending on the map layout and the fight that's taking place and how much health people have, some roles, you know, people have to step up and step in and fill in those shoes. Natural Selection 2 or Natural Selection does that as well, because if there's something that has to get done and the whole team, you know, is busy or preoccupied, then the commander will give you the welding torch, or they'll give you the walker, right? Like, you will have to fill in the shoes of a role as it comes up, but it's not something that you're forced to commit to. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a really cool way to design a game. It's just for something like esports, or for something like immediate quick action, it's just hard to do. I mean, teamwork is just hard to make, right? Like, it's not something that's particularly easy to do. And I think part of that is because, in general, like, there's not a long history of good teamwork games. There isn't. We have, what, like, maybe 10 on our map? And we've got problems with all of them, right?
Well,
most of the time, you're playing a single-player shooter by yourself. Or even worse, right? You're playing a team-based game, and there's just no teamwork in there at all, right? You're all playing Halo, and you just don't give a shit, and you're running at the enemy base, right? Or Call of Duty or whatever.
Like, your example of Borderlands, when I play Borderlands, I played the majority of that game as a single player experience. So, like, I would use that as, you know, what you were saying when I brought up Mario about how it's like, you know, it can be, a, like, what does being multiplayer bring to it? Like, that's the experience I had with Borderlands in a strange yeah. way.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's totally what they were trying to do, right? Like, the mm-hmm. the ability to, what is it, like, talent trees. All the talent trees in Borderlands, I think, are great because you can invest depending on, you know, how you want to be a team, how you don't want to be a team.
But, yeah, teamwork is hard to design. But I think I think in a lot of cases, like, the problem is that they're trying to not just, like, encourage it, but they're sort of trying to force it by splitting things up. And I almost feel like that's cheating because, you know, if I was able to do it in Doom with a pretty simple set of rules, like, the only thing that I would add if I had, like, my modding chops up is basically like a scoring system for getting out alive and just like so mm-hmm. like it almost make it like a versus race thing where you have two teams of four and then everyone is going through and basically like for every like if everyone gets through you get like 10 points but then for each person that dies the points you get at the end are half so that's yeah. you know
just well, that's sort of what Left 4 Dead does right in versus, each yeah. of you switch off, and then, you know, whoever gets there the fastest and with the most survivors.
Yeah, no, and like, that's, versus is probably the better mode in that game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Left 4 Dead, the goal is, I think, to make a scenario that gives you a sort of cinematic experience. Like, this is sort of the problem with, like, you know, things like Uncharted, right? Like, yes, it's very... it's scripted in a way, in the sense that, you know, you get incapacitated, someone has to save you. But if you're that guy saving that person, it can be pretty damn exciting, right? Things like esports stuff, like League of Legends, StarCraft, some of those games where it's like a new match and you have to get people instantly into that teamwork dynamic, I think it's important to differentiate. And again, I think you get something unique by differentiating immediately because you can have all that sort of meta play. For things like your Doom example, that's great. I would love to see a game like that. But I think part of it is just, it's behavior shaping, right? Like, the limitations they put on you in a lot of these games is just to encourage you to play as a team member. And it's not necessarily intuitive for a lot of people, especially people who are used to playing sort of selfishly in single-player shooters or selfishly in multiplayer shooters, things like that, right? It's just a sort of an attempt to try to get people to be on the same page. Because there are a lot of games that, theoretically, you could play as a team, but people don't. You know, people just run around like a crazy person.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's almost a problem that I see in most of the games of LoL that I've played. It's just that, you know, there's the meta that everyone is just sort of expecting everyone to play by. And kind of when you're not playing that, people think you're dicking around.
Yeah. And well, you probably are dicking around, to be fair.
You might be. You might just be bad at the game. You know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But I think that's where it comes, like... I think it's really hard to talk about and analyze teamwork games as though every person is playing a single-player game, because they're not, right? Like, the entire team is playing the game. So if you're playing around and you're new to the game and they think you're dicking around, like, they're not doing their job either, right? Everyone is just not – it's not just you. It's all of your other team members who are not doing a good job as a team. And that's something that they have to learn through play, right? You have to learn through it because – yeah, League of Legends does things that encourages teamwork in some of the same ways that Left 4 Dead does and Portal 2 does to some extent, but you still have to learn, right? Like, you still have to figure out what it means to be a team member. Like, I bet you dimes to dollars, people who've played, you know, soccer or sports in, like, middle school and high school are probably better video game team members than people who didn't.
Oh, I want to say the bigger thing, because, you know, also, like, across all of these games that we've talked about, you have better teamwork experiences if you have a consistent team, if you know people you're playing with.
That's a big thing I should say, too. Like, I don't play Borderlands 2 with strangers. I only play it with friends, because it's not the same game at all.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. Like, if designers are, you know, trying to force you quickly into that teamwork thing... it's because there's this expectation in mind that, you know, you might be playing with random people and you don't you know, you aren't going to necessarily talk and hit it off and be good at working together. But at the same time, like, I think that's the problem. Like, it's, you're trying to create this teamwork by forcing it upon them. Like, I've lost the interest in playing League, but at the same time, like, I think that I want to get into actually, like, maybe, like, watching matches and watching commentator stuff, because, you know, people who are on a team consistently and are working at, you know, higher levels and are actually, you know, like, making people work together as a team mechanically, I think, is boring, where if, you know, if everyone is sort of on the same keel and they are working together to say, like, you know, what they're problem solving, knowing that one of their tools is that there's more of them. You know, it's not just like, I need to wait for them because they can do what I can't. It's just like, there are two of us. That allows us to do more. And it's when people start playing at that level that I think the games get more interesting. And that's, it's true. I don't think that's something you can design.
Yeah. I mean, I watch pro matches, so I highly recommend watching some of those pro matches, because the level, I mean, I've played a lot of League of Legends and I think I'm okay. Their level of play is just ridiculous. It's just ridiculously good. They're doing things that, like, I'm pretty sure they sold their souls to the devil to do. It doesn't make sense to me.
Last month or so, they did all-star matches where they had, like, the best players from different teams play on the same team. Yep. So I'm really interested how those worked out, because, like, people who know what they're doing and know what it's like to, you know, effectively play on a team, but, you know, they have to take the first match or so, or however it was split up, to just be like, all right, how do we work together? And actually get to see, like, you know, how do people who know what playing on a team should look like, how do they feel out other, you know, pretty much random players before getting into a game? And I've heard those matches were actually pretty amazing.
They were really cool, actually. And the idea of those All-Star matches are great, too, because it was bringing some people who were... So, you know, oftentimes for those pro teams, there's one person who's basically making the call, like the team captain. They brought in, like, two team captains, right? So, like, this guy's St. Vicious and this guy is Skara, right? So it's, like, how they figure out who's going to be leading this team is sort of up in the air. And that's something that they negotiate, you know, off-camera, of course, and in their team house or whatever. But watching it is instantly interesting to me, because you're also watching some of the, like, team dynamics at play above the actual gameplay.
Yeah.
North America got dominated by the Koreans, by the way. That's what happened. No one's surprise.
Fantastic. I bet it was just interesting to watch anyway.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch. I mean, I'm a big fan of watching it. I don't know how much of that is just because I know what's going on screen, right? Like, it's not a super readable game, but on the subject of, like, playing with friends, especially in regards to League of Legends, you know, I think that there's an important difference between when you're playing with strangers and what you're trying to improve is, like, okay, how do I get better at my position? How do we act as a team together, right? Like, I think the reward from being forced to play a certain class is different than the reward from being forced to play a certain class once you already know everybody. Because you could argue, oh, well, if you all know each other, you work together, then, you know, maybe you want to add that level of variability. But not having that level of variability means that what you're improving is something different than what you would normally be improving. Right? What you're working on as a team is positioning. It's, you know, how each person is doing in their roles. You know, you're playing this metagame, sort of, where you think about, okay, after the match, what went well, what didn't work well, and now how can we as a team figure out how to improve our skill, right? And that's a level of, you're still playing, I think I would argue, right? Like, after a match and you're discussing what went down and how your mid's gonna get better next time and what to do in X circumstance, you're still sort of actively playing League of Legends, you're just getting something different out of it. And you can only get something different out of it, I think, if you are sort of committing to those roles early and if you are acting as a team. And that's different than if you were doing it singly. Like, I think a good example would be there was a pro team where, you know, the one person was top lane and another person was mid, and they switched. They switched roles, even though they hadn't done that in, like, years, which is just crazy. If it's just something that's so committed, right, something was happening in their team conversation that said, look, we need to switch it up. I'll be better at mid, you'll be better at top, we'll cover each other, right? Like, that's such an interesting level of gameplay. And, of course, it doesn't matter for us because we're not, like, million-dollar pro esports players, but watching it, I think, it's such a cool experience.
Well, the metagame is I think just across the board more interesting, and maybe this is a topic for a separate episode, but I think all of the games that wind up being good, like, for esports and for tournament play, are games that are very sort of open book. Like, everything that you need to know about it is there. It's in the open. You know, nothing is ever discovered. Nothing's ever really random. It's just, you know, everything's in the open, and everyone knows how everything works, and then it's a matter of watching players play against each other more than, you know, who's doing better at playing the game. It's about, you know, playing off each other, playing off the mind. If you're playing as a team, you know, seeing how the team dynamics work and making sure that, you know, the team can communicate and be adapt in the right way to the other team.
Yeah.
Like, that's always the better part of...
Yeah, and that's a unique type of teamwork, I think. That's really interesting, at least to me.
Yeah. And then, like, as, you know... I'm going to mention Dive Kick here, so prepare yourself.
Oh, I love Dive Kick.
Do you hate
Dive Kick? Nick.
Don't make me choose. I love Dive Kick, but I don't think I'm going to enjoy playing it. That's my guess right now.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. There's a lot of games I love that I don't like to play. Dark Souls.
But Dark Souls, I think I don't like, but I enjoy playing it. What's going on?
Oh, weird. Yeah.
But the thing about, like, Dive Kick is doing that. You know, Dive Kick is two buttons. Dive Kick is doing that thing. It's stripping everything down. It's making an extremely simple game that is all about, you know, playing off of the person, playing off of timing, playing off of expectation. And that's entirely what it's about.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, like, you know, and this is probably, like, a bad metaphor, but, like, when I play something class-based or something like League, you know, something that, you know, the teamwork is forced by giving different people different abilities, it makes me feel like, what if there was, like, Dive Kick and Drop Punch, and everyone played two teams, and just one person worked the legs and one person worked the fist? Like,
yeah.
And then eventually you'll get a whole fighting game out of it, but neither person is playing a game that is, you know, as mechanically good or interesting as, you know, one-on-one regular fighting game. That's...
Yeah.
I mean, Dive Kick is interesting, but it's doing an interesting thing for what it's doing, but at the same time, it's a stupid game.
Yeah, I mean, it's stupid, but you're right. Like, there's... Like you said, it's super simple, but the level of play... It's just, it's different, right? It's unique. And we should say, like, not all games have to be super complicated teamwork. There's some amazing teamwork, like, indie games out there. Like, gosh, what is it? There's, like, this really cool space one where you're, like, each person is on a different piece of your ship and you can rotate it, but you're also selfish. And, you know, there's games where, like, it's like a lunar lander and you've got four engines and each person controls a different engine. Yeah, and everyone gets one engine. Right,
oh,
like
I played it
at Indiecade. Oh, this was a great game. So it was at Indiecade, and you're playing this lunar lander, and you all have different engines on the ship, and you have to go collect orbs without touching these like red walls. But you control your booster with a foot pedal, and so you're always yelling at people to like, oh, to the left, and then people overcorrect.
Yeah,
it's awesome. It's so good. It's such a good teamwork experience.
It sounds like the most aggravating time.
It is. It's so aggravating, but that's sort of what you get in team games, right? Like, again, what's so funny to me is that video games offer so many different types of teamwork experiences, right? Like, League, again, is nothing like this Lunar Lander game, which isn't like Left 4 Dead. But there's something so unique that you get in all of these, and you sort of have to differentiate, and you don't have to, and sometimes you don't have to. Sometimes it could be your Doom experience or this, like, Lunar Lander experience. But as long as, like, you're getting something... As long as things are working well together, that the type of play that you want to be having is, or rather that the gameplay is adding to the type of play you want to be having, then that's great.
Man, that actually reminds me. When I was a freshman, we got a copy of Steel Battalion.
Oh, yeah.
And we had about, like, five or six people. Mm-hmm. And we did Voltron. Like, everyone...
Yeah.
One person had one stick, one person had the other stick, one person had the foot pedals, one person had every button except windshield wiper, and one person had windshield wiper.
That's brilliant.
It was like exactly the same, and that's all sort of mechanically interesting because it's multiple people controlling like a single unit. So at that point...
Have you played Space Alert?
Space Alert?
Yes. Oh, it's this, okay. It's this really weird... It's an awesome... it's an iOS game.
Yeah.
And so each of you, you're like on a spaceship And you can play, I think right now it's up to 7 people. Oh, and God. You have your little panel, and your panel says...
Oh, Space Team!
Oh, Space Team. Is that what it's called?
Space Team is amazing. Yes, we've played a lot of Space Team.
Space Team is an awesome teamwork game, and it's so ridiculous. It's like the Dive Kick of teamwork games, because it's super simplified, and all you do is yell at each other.
Yeah. No. Oh, God. Space Team is an amazing teamwork game. Oh, my God. Especially when you get to the point where everything is pictographs, and because everyone's going to describe it differently, so it's just like...
Yeah. Oh my gosh, like, I don't think I got that far. Everything becomes really? Like simples. Oh, man. That's brilliant. Yeah, I don't have enough people to play. That's the other thing, is I don't have enough like immediate friends to play Space Team.
Yeah, no.
So
I think
maybe that's why I'm so into like team games. I play a lot of team based board games, by the way. So
yeah. Well, what's a good team based board game?
Oh gosh, there's some Pandemic. It's great co op games. Battlestar.
I hated Pandemic.
Ugh, you're so wrong, Nick.
Well, no, I hated Pandemic because, like, even, like, it was almost this weird thing where, like, we weren't playing together. Like, we were all just agreeing what we were going to do. It did not matter that there was more than one person playing it. And then, even then, it was kind of the same thing about, like, okay, this is happening. Here's how we respond to this. Okay, this is happening.
Yeah, that could be a problem. Did you win?
Oh, yeah, we won.
Yeah, I think that...
We won with no stress.
I think what is required then is just increasing the difficulty. Because you're right, like at some point you get to a point where it's just like, I'm on autopilot.
Yeah.
Thankfully, like there's an expansion, you could really like add variability to the game and add difficulties to the game. But other ones, like I think Cutthroat Caverns is a really cool pseudo teamwork game. I think the Game of Thrones board game does a really good job of adding teamwork to the board game experience.
Game of Thrones game is weird. What about Arkham Horror? That would actually probably... That's been a pretty good teamwork game.
Yeah, Arkham Horror is good. It's super bloated and complicated, so it's just hard to like get new players into it. So it's not something I'd recommend to everyone, but that's a fun game, yeah, for sure.
Well, like, I've had good with that because it's, you know, everybody's working towards the same goal, and there is a lot of... Like, it does have that sort of, you know, random elements to it, which can just screw you over in the end no matter how good you are, but it does have this, you know, everybody, you know... It's not that anybody has, like, everybody does have, like, a specific ability, which you would think I would complain about, but it just, you know, like, everyone can have the same experiences overall. It's just some people will deal with them better.
Well, and the abilities aren't super defining of what you can do. Like, it's more, like, it's almost more flavor text in a way.
One guy starts with a gun. That is his, gun and whiskey.
There's actually a card game Arkham Horror. I forget what it's called, but it does a little better job of streamlining the game. So if anyone's into board games, I think that's a cool one to check out.
Hmm. There was a card game version of Space Hulk that was just, I think it was just Death Angels.
Huh.
So it's one of those 40k, but it can be up to 4 players, and it's, you know, alien spawn, and it's just, you know, about shooting them all. But that it has the same sort of issue. Like, there's instructions on how to play that with one player. It's just like, all right.
I played the Game of Thrones board game by myself once. Yeah? It was both awesome and terribly sad and depressing.
I can't even laugh at that. I know that. I know that all too well.
Yeah. There's also a board game called Shadowhunters. It's really cool teamwork. It's a really cool teamwork game as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, if anyone needs suggestions for teamwork board games, this guy right here.
So let's... Wrap this up. Did we decide what the problem with teamwork is?
I think it's just hard to design a good teamwork game. That's all.
It's hard.
I also think people should play League of Legends, because I think that the more you play, the closer you'll get to the ideal team experience.
There is a game that is extremely similar to League of Legends that I think people should play, but it does not exist yet.
You should try Awesome Knots too.
I was curious about Awesome. Actually, no. The same friend, one of his final projects was actually a MOBA-type game. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like I described to him what my ideal MOBA was, and he said, oh, I think I just made that game. So I'm still waiting to get the code from him. Like, you know, school projects, so it's hard to get good ones.
Yeah. I mean, MOBAs are growing in popularity, and there's still a lot of room to grow in that space, so I would not be the least bit surprised to see something really cool come out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, like, you know, Orcs Must Die, the sort of, like, tower defense-style teamwork games can, you know, maybe they can fill that role for you.
You know, the sort of tower defense style games, I've had some good times with those. Mm-hmm. I think tower defense is a little boring. Cube Men 2, which the only reason I heard of it was because it was part of the Steam trading card program. Ugh. But that's, it's drawing the line right between an RTS and a tower defense. And I've been having some fun with that game. I need to find somebody to play that, to play the versus with.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, teamwork.
Teamwork, we did it!
We can get our badge now. We saved the day. We arrested Sanchez.
There was a big shootout on the veranda, and now we're just, you know, one leg up on a big stack of drugs. We're going to get a picture in the paper. And exactly. It's, you know, Hero Cop saves Miami.
Yep. Oh, Miami, that's a great location.
Yep. That's where all the drugs are, I heard. All right. This is Ben, the Leaku Studios podcast, talking about teamwork. If you would like to send us any feedback, if there's anything you would like to hear us talk about, you can send us an email, podcast@alikustudios.net. You can also find us on Twitter, @Aliku, aliku.tumblr.com, facebook.com/Aliku. You can find us on the iTunes.
Streets of Miami.
You can find us on the streets of Miami, walking the beat. And then when we get off, we'll have to go chase down drug dealers dealing Valkyrie, and it turns out this is actually a Max Payne prequel?
That works, yeah.
All right. You can find us in the iTunes Music Store and on Zune Marketplace. If you want to leave us a review, that would be greatly appreciated, and it would help us out. George, what would you like to plug?
I'm from Experience Points, so go over to experiencepoints.net if you want to hear me podcasting about more stuff. I think this week we're talking about The Walking Dead's 400 Days.
Ooh.
We're doing this week. Yep. Should be fun. And I also write over at Pop Matters, so you can go over there too.
Yeah. I throw my full support behind experiencepoints.net.
Yay!
Because it's interesting. It's thoughtful.
We're also buddy cops over there.
So many buddy cops. I remember last week when he had to save the president's daughter from mushroom-infected zombies?
Yeah. Actually, that's pretty accurate. Yep.
Okay, yeah. And yeah, that's going to do it. So until next time, we're signing off and saying remember to give credit where credit is 25 cents per play.